In an empty ballroom, I looked up and met her eyes. On a table. She let out a loud whoop and clapped her hands. Look at you, you wild thing! It was so like something Max would say to me, but delivered so differently, that for a moment it rendered me a little speechless. It was disorienting to ache for him like this, to wonder what he was doing and whether he was presently looking at pictures of me spread out beneath him. Seriously, Sarah, I knew you had it in you, she added. The thing is, I don't really want another relationship, and even if I did, I get the impression he isn't really like that. I stopped before spilling too much. If I alluded any more to Max's reputation on page 6, Chloe would absolutely know who I meant. She hummed, listening as she sorted through a stack of journals. But he's fun, Chloe. And you know how things were with Andy. She stopped sorting, but toyed with the corner of a page. Well, that's the thing, Sarah. I don't really. I mean, come on. In the 3 years you and I have known each other, I only had dinner with you guys maybe 5 times. I learned more about him from the papers than I did from any stories you told me. You hardly ever talked about him. I always just ended up with the sense that he was using your family's reputation to appear well-connected and wholesome. I felt guilt and embarrassment settle in my chest like a lead weight. I know, I said, inhaling and letting it out again slowly. It was one thing to imagine how people saw me, another to hear it straight out. I always worried that if I said anything about him to someone, it would be misconstrued and somehow break his public strategy. Plus, we weren't like you and Bennett. We didn't have a lot of fun together by the time I met you. Andy was a phony and an epic jerk, and it took me a really long time to see that. This thing on Friday was just fun. Chloe looked up. Hey, it's fine. I knew it was something like that. She turned back to another box. So this is good, then? He's not like Andy? Yeah. So you mean he's into you? At least physically, which is fine for me right now. So what's the problem? It sounds like the perfect situation. He's kind of intense, and I don't really trust him. Putting down the books in her hand, she turned to face me. Sarah, this is going to sound really weird, but just hear me out, okay? Of course. When Bennett and I started whatever it was we were doing, I was determined that every time it happened, it would be the last. But I think I always knew it would keep happening until it had run its course. Luckily for us, I don't think we'll ever stop feeling what we felt those first few times. Even so, I didn't trust him. I didn't really even like him. Above all of it, he was my boss. I mean, hello, inappropriate. She laughed, and following her gaze over to her desk, I saw that the first and only thing she'd unpacked so far was a picture of the two of them at the house in France where he'd proposed to her. But I think if I'd just given myself permission to enjoy it a little bit, it might not have consumed me so much. I was starting to know exactly what she meant about being consumed. And I knew, too, that I was consciously fighting it with Max, with the idea of Max. But my reasons were different. It wasn't a boss-employee thing, or any other kind of power struggle. It was the simple fact that I didn't want to be anyone else's but my own for a while. And although this thing with Max was insane and completely different from anything I'd ever felt before, I was different. I liked it. A lot. I do like him, I admitted carefully. But I don't think he's boyfriend material. In fact, I know he's not. And I am most definitely not girlfriend material right now. Okay, so maybe you just get together every now and then as fuck buddies. I laughed, pressing my face into my hands. Seriously, whose life is this? She looked at me like she wanted to pat my head. Sarah, it's yours. George was reading a newspaper in my office with his feet up on my desk when I returned. Working yourself to the bone? I teased, sitting on the corner of my desk. On my lunch break, and you had a package arrive, darling. You found it in the mailroom? He shook his head and lifted the parcel off his lap, waving it at me. Hand-delivered? By a very cute bike messenger, I might add. I had to sign for it and promise not to open it. I snatched it from him and jerked my chin to the door, wordlessly telling George to scram. You're not even going to tell me what it is?
I don't have X-ray vision, and you are not going to be here when I open it.
Get out. With a noise of protest, he kicked his feet off my desk and left, closing my door on his way out. I stared at the package for several minutes, feeling the rectangular shape of it beneath the padded envelope. A frame? My heart jumped in my chest. Tucked inside were a wrapped parcel and a note that read, "Petal, open this with discretion. It is my favorite. Your stranger." I swallowed, feeling a little as if I were on the verge of unleashing something I would no longer be able to contain. Looking up to ensure that my door was firmly shut, I unwrapped it, my hands shaking when I realized that it was indeed a frame. Made of deep, simply cut wood, it held a single photo, a picture of my stomach and the curve of my waist. The black table beneath me was visible. Max's fingertips were also visible at the bottom, as if he was pinning me to the surface at my hips. A faint beam of light spread across my skin, a reminder of the door opening nearby, of the person wandering around the room just beyond the screen. He must have taken that picture just as he buried himself in me. I closed my eyes, remembering how it had felt when I came. I was like a bare wire plugged into the wall, and with the charge that would illuminate that dark ballroom running through me instead. He'd bared my clit with his fingers, stroked me just like that. I'd wanted to close my legs against the intensity of it, but he'd growled, held me open with his pounding hips. I shoved the frame back in the mailing envelope and hid the entire thing in my purse. Heat spread like a clawing vine across my skin, and I couldn't even turn up the air, couldn't open a window this high in the building. How did he know? I felt the weight of it pressing down on me. How much I'd wanted it to be a photo of us. How much I'd wanted to be seen. He understood. Maybe more than I did myself. Stumbling to my desk, I sat down and tried to take stock of the situation. But directly in front of me was today's New York Post, open to page 6. There, smack in the middle of the page, was a story titled, "Sex God Stella Goes Solo." The Playboy millionaire venture capitalist tried something a little new Saturday night at MoMA. No, it wasn't looking at art, and it most certainly wasn't raising money. Let's be honest, the man already raises money better than every slot machine in Vegas. Saturday night at his annual fundraiser to benefit Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation, Max Stella arrived. Alone. When asked where his date was, he simply said, "I'm hoping she's already inside." Unfortunately for us, photographers were forbidden from the event. "We'll get you next time, Mad Max." I stared down at the paper, knowing George had put it here for me to see and was probably now laughing to himself. My hands shook as I folded it and shoved it in a drawer. Why hadn't it occurred to me that a photographer could have been in there? That there were no photographers in the event at all was a miracle. And although Max had certainly known this, I hadn't, and I hadn't even thought to care. "Crap," I whispered. I knew with sudden clarity that this thing between us either needed to end absolutely, or I needed some semblance of control. Feeling relieved in hindsight was a slippery slope, and I'd already dodged 3 bullets in my first week. I hit the spacebar on my laptop to wake up my computer and Googled the location of Stella and Sumner. I couldn't help but smile. Of course. 30 Rockefeller Plaza. Stella and Sumner took up half of the 72nd floor of the GE building, one of the most iconic buildings in the city. Even I recognized it from blocks away. However, for such a well-known venture capital firm, I was surprised how little space it required. Then again, it took very little to run a company that basically just raised and invested money. Max, Will, some junior executives, and assorted math brainiacs.
My heart was hammering so fast I had to count 10 deep breaths and then duck into a bathroom just outside their office doors to get myself together. I checked each stall to ensure it was empty and then looked myself right in the eye. If you're doing this with him, remember three things, Sarah. One, he wants what you want. Sex, no strings. You don't owe him more. Two, don't be afraid to ask for what you want. And three, I stood up straighter, taking a deep breath. Be young. Have fun. Turn the rest off. Back in the hall, the glass doors to Stella and Sumner opened automatically when I approached, and an older female receptionist greeted me with a genuine smile. I'm here to see Max Stella, I said, returning it. She had a familiar smile. Familiar brow. I glanced down and read her name placard. Bridget Stella. Holy crap, did his mother work as his receptionist? Do you have an appointment, love? Her accent was just like his. I jerked my attention back to her face. No, actually, I was hoping I could just get a minute. What's your name? Sarah Dillon? She smiled, but not a knowing smile, thank God, looked at her computer, and then nodded a little to herself before picking up the phone. I've got a Sarah Dillon here hoping for a chat. She listened for barely 3 seconds and then said, right. When she hung up, she was already nodding. Straight down the hall to the right. His is the office at the end. I thanked her and followed her directions down the hall. When I drew closer, I saw that Max stood in his doorway, leaning against the frame, and wearing such a self-satisfied smile that I pulled up a good 10 feet short of my destination. Get over yourself, I whispered. He burst out laughing, turning and walking into his office. I followed him in, closing the door behind me. I'm not here for what you think I'm here for. And then I paused, reconsidering. Okay, maybe I am here for what you think I'm here for, but not really. I mean, not here. And not today, here, when your mother is right out there. Oh my God, who hires their mother as their receptionist? He was still laughing, that damn dimple etched into his cheek. And with each rambling word I unleashed, he seemed to laugh harder. God damn if he wasn't the most playful, adorable, infuriating ass. Stop laughing! I yelled, and then slapped a hand over my mouth as the words echoed back to me from the walls all around us. He struggled to straighten his expression, walked over to me and kissed me once, so sweetly I literally forgot for a beat what I was here for.
Sarah, he said quietly, you look beautiful.
You always say that, I said. I closed my eyes, felt my shoulders slump. I couldn't remember a single instance in the last 3 years where Andy had complimented me on something other than the wine I chose for dinner.
That's because I'm nothing if not honest. But what are you wearing?
I opened my eyes and looked down at my white blouse, pleated navy skirt, and thick red belt. Max was staring directly at my chest, and I felt my nipples harden under his gaze.
He grinned. He could tell.
I'm wearing work stuff.
You look like a naughty schoolgirl done right.
I'm 27, I reminded him. You're not being a pervert by checking out my boobs.
27, he repeated, grinning.
He acted like every bit of information I gave him was a pearl he could string on a necklace.
How many days is that?
I narrowed my eyes at him. What? It's... I looked up for a few seconds. About 9,850. But more, actually, since my birthday is in August. About 10,000.
He groaned and pressed a dramatic hand to his chest. Fuck. Numbers queen and stacked like that, I'm helpless against your charm.
I couldn't help but smile back at him. He'd never been rude or sharp with me, and had given me more orgasms in a week and a half than any other man had in... Ugh, Sarah, depressing, move on. He looked me over once before saying,
Well, I certainly can't wait for you to tell me why you've blessed me with your visit today. But let me answer your most recent question. Yes, My mother is my receptionist, and it does seem uncouth. But I dare you even to try to get her to leave that desk. I assure you, you'll walk away with one ear pulled from your head."
He took a step forward, and suddenly he was standing so close. Too close. I could see the tiny stripes in his tailored suit jacket, see the shadow of stubble on his chin. "I came here to talk to you," I said. I must have sounded minuscule, and I needed to find some power to put behind the words I wanted to give him. I didn't want to be how I was with Andy initially, easily bulldozed. After 6 years, I realized the problem was I'd never really cared enough to fight for anything. He smiled.
"I figured as much. Do you want to sit?"
I shook my head.
"Do you want something to drink?"
He walked over to a small bar in the corner and held up a crystal bottle filled with amber liquid. Without thinking, I nodded, and he poured 2 glasses. Handing it to me, he whispered,
"Just 2 fingers today, Petal."
I surrendered to my laugh. "Thank you. I'm sorry, this whole situation is just eating at me." He raised an eyebrow but seemed to rethink lacing further innuendo into the moment.
"Likewise."
"I feel a little out of my depth with you," I started. He laughed, but not rudely.
"I can tell."
"See, before what happened in the club, I'd been with the same guy since I was 21. Max took a sip of his drink and then stared down into the glass, listening. I considered how much I really wanted to tell him about Andy, and me, and who we were together. Andy was older, more established, more settled. "It was fine," I said. "It was always fine. I think a lot of relationships end up that way. Just sort of fine. Easy, whatever. He wasn't my best friend. He wasn't really my lover. We cohabitated. We had a routine."
"I was loyal. He banged women all over Chicago." "So what happened? What detonated?"
I paused, looking at him. Had I used that word with Max? I thought back and realized, no, I hadn't. I'd used that to describe my life when I left, but I'd never shared it with him. I felt goosebumps spread along my arms. A million answers flashed through my head, but the one that I gave him was, "I got tired of being so old when I was so young."
"That's it. That's all you're going to tell me. You're a complete puzzle, Sarah."
Looking up at him, I said, "For what we've done together, you don't need to know more than that I left a lot of unhappiness in Chicago and am not looking to be involved with anyone."
"But then you found me at the club," he said.
"If I remember correctly," I said, dragging my finger down the front of his shirt, "you found me."
"Right," he said and smiled.
But for the first time I could remember, his eyes didn't do it first, or even later.
"And here we are."
"Here we are," I agreed. I figured it was my one wild moment. I looked out the window at the billowing white clouds, looking for all the world so solid and hardy as if I could leap from this floor and catch one and go somewhere, anywhere, where I would feel sure of what I was about to say. "But I've seen you a few times since then, and I like you. I just don't want things to get crazy or off track."
"I understand you perfectly."
Did he? He couldn't possibly. And in truth, it didn't matter whether he understood that even more important than my life staying on track was my need for it to not be as safe as it had been in Chicago. Safe was a nightmare. Safe was a lie. "One night a week," I said. "I'll be yours 1 night a week. He stared at me with that calm, reflective expression, and I realized that every time I'd seen him before this, he'd been showing every card he had. His smile was complete honesty. His laughter was him being perfectly real. But this expression was his mask. My stomach tightened painfully. "If you even want to see me again, that is."
"I absolutely do," he assured me. "I'm just not entirely sure what you're saying."
I stood up and walked over to the window. I felt him move behind me and I said, "I feel like the only way I can handle it right now is to give it a clear boundary.
Outside that boundary, I'm here to work, to build a life. But inside that boundary, I trailed off, closing my eyes and just letting the idea take hold. The idea of Max's hands and his mouth, his sculpted torso and the thick length of him pressing into me again and again. We can do anything. When I'm with you, I don't want to worry about anything else. He moved to the side so that I could turn my head just slightly and look right at him, and stared directly into my eyes. He smiled. The mask was gone. The mid-afternoon sun blazed into the room, and his eyes looked like green caught on fire.
You're offering only your body to me.
Yeah. I was the first to look away.
You'll truly only give me one night a week.
I winced. Yes.
So you want to have what? Some sort of committed fling?
I laughed and said, I certainly don't like the idea of you whoring your way across the burrows. So, yes, that's part of the deal. If you even do that. He scratched his jaw, not answering my implied question.
What night? The same night all the time?
I hadn't really thought this part through, but I nodded, winging it. Fridays.
If I'm not to see other women, what if I have a work function, or an event on a Thursday or Saturday, that requires a date?
My chest twisted with anxiety. No. No public appearances. I guess you can take your mom.
You're a demanding little thing.
His smile followed his words and grew slowly, like a low-burning fire.
This feels so organized. That hasn't been our modus operandi to date, little petal.
I know, I allowed, but this is the only way that felt sane to me. I don't want to be in the papers with you. His eyebrows pulled together.
Why that, specifically?
Shaking my head, I realized I'd said too much. I murmured, I just don't.
Do I get any say in how this goes?
He asked.
Do we just meet at your flat and fuck all night?
I ran my index finger down his chest again, venturing lower, to his belt buckle. Here was the part I hoped he was up for, and the part that scared me most. After the club, the restaurant, the fundraiser, I was starting to feel like an adrenaline junkie. I didn't want to give that up either. I think we've done pretty well so far. I don't want to go to my apartment, or yours for that matter. Text me where I should be, and generally what to expect so I know what to wear. I don't care about the rest. I lifted myself on my toes, kissed him. It started out teasing, but then turned deep enough to make me want to take back everything I'd said and give myself to him every night of the week. But he pulled away first, breathing heavily.
I can avoid photographers, but I've become obsessed with taking pictures of you. That's my only condition. No faces, but photos are allowed.
A shiver moved up my spine, and I stared up at him. The thought of having proof of him touching my bare skin, of him looking at pictures of us together and getting hard, made a hot flush spread up my chest to my cheeks. He noticed, smiling, and running the backs of his fingers along my jaw. When this ends, you delete them, I said. He nodded immediately.
Of course.
I'll see you Friday, then. I reached inside his jacket, taking a moment to run my hand over the hard lines of his chest before pulling his phone from the inside pocket and dialing my cell number. It rang in my purse. I could sense his amused smile without even looking up at his face. I slipped his phone back in his pocket, turned, and walked away, knowing if I looked over my shoulder at him, I'd walk back. I waved goodbye to his mother and took the long elevator ride back to the lobby, thinking about that cell camera of his all the way down. Two blocks away, my phone buzzed in my purse. Meet me Friday at 11th and Kent in Brooklyn, 6 o'clock. Have a cab bring you and stay in it until I've opened the door. You may come straight from work.
Six. Back when I was young and naive, Dimitri Gerard had been the second client I ever took on. He'd had a small but profitable antiques business in North London. On paper, Dimitri's business was nothing special. He paid his bills on time, had a steady client list, and made more money a year than what he put out on expenditures. But what was truly exceptional about Dimitri was his uncanny ability to sniff out rare finds that few people knew existed. Pieces that, in the right hands, sold for small fortunes to collectors around the globe. He'd needed capital to expand, and, I'd later learned, to bankroll a long list of informants who kept him apprised of what was to be found and where. Informants who made him a very, very rich man. Legally, of course. In fact, Dimitri Gerard had become so successful, he currently owned 12 warehouses in New York City alone, the largest of which stood at 11th and Kent. Pulling the paper from my pocket, I entered the code Dimitri had given me on the phone this morning. The alarm beat twice before the door buzzed, the lock disengaging with a loud metallic click. With a quick wave to my driver, I opened the heavy steel door, hearing my car pull away from the curb as I stepped inside. A freight elevator took me to the fifth floor, and I slipped off my jacket, rolling up my sleeves as I looked around. Clean cement walls and floors, bay lighting suspended from a beamed ceiling. Dimitri used these buildings to house collections that would later be sold at auction or moved to various dealers. Thank fuck, this collection had yet to sell. Sunlight still poured through the dingy and cracked windows that lined two walls of the warehouse, and row after row of draped mirrors filled the space. I crossed the room, stirring up small plumes of dust with my footsteps, and lifted the plastic covering from the only piece of furniture in the entire warehouse, a red velvet chaise I'd had delivered earlier that day. I smiled, running my hands along the curved back, and imagining how gorgeous Sarah would look later, naked and begging on top of it. Perfect. I spent the next hour carefully uncovering each of the mirrors and arranging them around the space, angling each one toward the chaise I'd placed in the center. Some were ornate, with wide gilded frames and glass that had become speckled and hazy around the edges with time. Others were more delicate, simple filigree or rich, gleaming wood. The sun had ducked behind the surrounding buildings by the time I'd finished, but still shone bright enough that I wouldn't need to turn on any of the fluorescent lamps overhead. Soft light filtered through the warped glass, and I checked my watch, noting that Sarah would be here any moment. For the first time since I'd devised this little plan, I considered the possibility that she might not show up at all, and how disappointing that would be. Which was strange. Most women were easy to read, wanting me for my money or the notoriety that came with being seen on my arm. But not Sarah. I'd never had to work even remotely this hard to get a woman's attention before, and I wasn't quite sure how I felt about that. Was I honestly that much of a cliché, only wanting what I couldn't have? I pacified myself with the fact that we were both adults, we were both getting what we wanted, and we would each move on soon enough. No harm done. Simple. The fact that she was a stellar shag didn't hurt either. My mobile vibrated from across the room, and with a final glance around, I let myself into the lift and travelled the short ride down to the empty lobby. Her head snapped up at the sound of the door, and my dick got hard at the sight of her standing there, expectant, unsure. "Easy, mate. Let's get her inside before we ravage her." "Hello," I said, bending to kiss her cheek. "You look beautiful." Her scent was already familiar, a little something like summer and citrus. I stepped outside and paid the driver, turning back to her as he drove away. "That was pretty presumptuous of you," she said, lifting her brow. Her hair was smooth with just the slightest bit of wave in it tonight, the front held in place with a small silver barrette. I imagined what it would look like later, that prim little clip gone, tangled and wild after I'd fucked her. Especially considering I already paid him. I looked back in the direction of the cab before shaking my head with a smile. Let's just say that lack of confidence has never been my hang-up. "What is your hang-up, then?" she asked. "I don't think I have one, actually. I think that's why you like me." "Like is a pretty strong word," she said, the corner of her mouth curving up into a smirk. "Touché, devil child." I grinned as I opened the door, indicating that she lead the way. We were silent as we walked to the elevator and throughout the short ride up, but a new, heavy sense of anticipation seemed to pulse all around us. The lift opened directly into the warehouse, but instead of moving inside, Sarah turned to face me. "Before we go in there," she said, nodding toward the room, "I need you to tell me that there are no chains or, like, implements inside." I laughed, only now seeing how bad this looked, how much trust she was placing in me by coming here. I promised myself I'd make it worth it. "No shackles or whips, I promise." I leaned down, kissed her ear. "There may be a little light spanking, but let's see how the night goes first, shall we?" I swatted her on the behind before I walked past her to lead us inside. "Wow," she said, a hint of color still blooming across her cheeks as she crossed the threshold. So many contradictions. I let myself watch as she took in the room, turning slowly. Burgundy-wrapped dress, legs that went on for miles and ended in sky-high black heels. "Wow," she repeated. "I'm glad you approve." She ran a finger along the surface of a large silver mirror, her eyes meeting mine in the reflection. "I'm sensing a theme here." "If by theme you mean that watching you gets me off, then yes." I sat in one of the large window frames, stretching my legs out in front of me. "I love watching you come. But even more, I love the way you get off on being watched." Her eyes widened, as if what I'd said was somehow shocking. I paused. Had I misread her? To me, she was pretty clearly at least a little exhibitionist, and more than a lot fascinated with the thrill of being seen. "You know I enjoy looking at nude photos of you. I know you enjoy public sex. Where have I misunderstood what we're doing here?" It's just hearing it out loud that surprised me. Turning away, she walked around the room, looking at each mirror she passed. "I guess I always assumed other people like this kind of thing, not me. I realize that sounds ridiculous." "Just because what you had before was different doesn't mean it's what you like." "I don't think I fully understand what I like," she said, turning to face me. "At least, I don't feel like I've done enough in my life to really know." "Well, here you are in a warehouse with nothing but a velvet chaise in the middle of the room and mirrors all around. I'm happy to help you try to figure that out." She laughed, walking back over to me. "This building isn't yours." "More checking up on me, I see." She set her bag against the wall and took a seat on the chaise, crossing her legs. "I need to know something outside of the gossip columns. Make sure we wouldn't be recreating a scene from Leatherface." I shook my head, laughing, surprised at how relieved I was she hadn't just shown up blindly. "It belongs to a client of mine. A client with a fetish for mirrors." "I don't know how much you found in your digging," I said, "but I have two partners, and each of us has his own area of expertise. Will Sumner specializes in biotech, James Marshall in technology. I focus more on the arts, galleries and antiques," she said, motioning around the room. "Yes." "Which brings us to why we're here," she said. "Done with the 20 questions? For now. Satisfied? Not yet." I crossed the room, bending to kneel in front of her. "You're okay with this? With you taking me in a warehouse full of mirrors?" She tucked a strand of hair behind her ear and shrugged, in a wildly innocent gesture. "Surprisingly, yes." I moved my hand to the back of her neck. "I've been thinking about this all day, how you'd look sitting here." Her skin was so soft, and I let my fingers trail down along her throat, along her collarbone. I pressed a kiss over her pulse, feeling the beat of it against my tongue. She whispered my name, her legs falling open as she brought me closer. "I want you naked," I said, wasting no time and pulling down the front of her dress. "I want you naked and wet and begging for me to fuck you." I moved to her breast, sucking, before I bit down on her nipple through the delicate lace of her bra. "I want you to be so loud that the people at the bus stop across the street know my name." She gasped and reached for my tie, loosening it and pulling it from around my neck. I could bind you with that, I said, spank you, suck on your pussy until you begged me to stop. I watched as she fumbled with the buttons of my shirt, the hungry look in her eyes as she pushed it down my shoulders. Or I could gag you, she teased with a smirk. Promises, promises, I whispered, taking her bottom lip into my mouth. I kissed down her chin, sucked on her neck. She gripped me through my trousers, my body already responding, my cock hard in her palm. I unfastened her dress and pushed it open, pulling her arms free and tossing it to the side. Her bra followed closely behind. Tell me what you want, Sarah. She hesitated, watching me, before whispering, touch me. Where? I asked, and trailed a finger up her thigh. Here? Her skin was milky white against the red velvet of the chaise, the image better than any I'd conjured up on my own, and I nibbled her hip bone as I slipped the tiny scrap of lace she wore down her legs. Dipping a finger inside, I sucked in a sharp breath at how wet she was already. I circled my thumb over her clit, both of us looking down to where I touched her. I watched the muscles of her stomach quiver, heard the soft sounds as I moved over her wet skin. Standing, I unfastened my trousers, tossing a condom to the chaise before pushing my clothes down my hips. She didn't waste any time, sitting up and taking me in her hand, running her tongue along the head of my cock. I watched as she sucked on the tip, her lips warm and wet. Glancing up, I caught a reflection across the room. She held on to my hips, her pretty caramel-colored hair twisted around my fingers, her head bobbing as she moved over me. I forced myself not to look down, knowing what her long, dark lashes would look like from this angle, resting against her pink cheeks. Or better, her dark eyes open as she looked up. I felt the point where each of her fingers gripped me, felt the soft brush of her hair against my stomach, the heat of her mouth and the vibration of each encouraging moan. It felt so fucking good. Too good. Not yet, I said, gasping but somehow managing to pull away. I ran my fingers along her lips. It was so tempting to just watch her suck me off, to let myself come down her throat. But I had other plans. Turn around. I want you on your knees. She did as I asked, glancing over her shoulder at me as I stood behind her. That look nearly did me in, and I had to force myself to think of spreadsheets, or even Will's bad jokes, as I reached for the condom and tore it open, sliding it over my length. I gripped her hip, taking one hand and guiding myself to her entrance, rubbing my tip against her before pressing down and pushing inside. Her head fell forward, hiding her face from my view. That wouldn't do at all. I reached out, wrapping my hands in her hair, and pulled, bringing her head back up. Her breath caught, eyes wide in surprise and hunger. There you are, I said, drawing back slightly and shifting forward. Right there. I nodded to the mirror opposite us. I want you to look right there, yeah? She licked her lips, nodding as best she could. Do you like that? I asked, tightening my hold. She stuttered out a yes. I moved faster, watching her with something like awe. It was clear she was letting me lead tonight, take what I wanted. The gears spun in my head, already trying to sort out how I could draw her out, how I could make her as tangled with need as I felt when I was close to her. See how much better it makes it? I asked, following our every movement in the mirror as I continued to push in and out of her tight body. See how perfect that is? I circled my hips, sped up my movements. And over there, I tilted her head to the right, to another mirror angled toward us. Fuck. Look at the way your tits move as I fuck you. The curve of your back. Your fucking perfect ass. I brought my hands from her hair to her shoulders, gripping them, using them for leverage. I squeezed the muscle there, my thumbs bracketing the curve of her spine. Her skin was slick with sweat, her hair beginning to cling to her forehead. I bent my knees to change the angle and she arched under my palms, her body rocking back against mine. She shifted her weight to her elbows and cried out, asking for harder, her fingers twisting into the fabric of the chaise. I gripped her hips in each hand, fucking into her, pulling her back roughly with every thrust. "Max," she moaned, her cheek turned into the cushion. She looked so wrecked, so overwhelmed and lost to everything but the feeling of where my body fit inside hers. My legs were starting to burn, and pleasure buzzed up and down my spine. Pressure began to build in my stomach, and I bent forward, wrapping my arms around her waist to shift our position. She reached back with one hand, holding my hip, pulling me into her. "That's it," I said through panting breaths, closer and closer, feeling her start to tighten around me, my own pleas muffled against her shoulder. "Can you get there?" "So close," she said, eyelids fluttering closed, teeth buried in her bottom lip. I reached forward to touch her clit, finding her own slick fingers already there. The chaise creaked beneath us, and I briefly considered the possibility that it might collapse. "Max, faster." I looked around again, seeing us in different mirrors and from different angles, both of our fingers moving over her while we moved, and knew I'd never seen anything even remotely like this. I knew this was a game, but fuck if I ever wanted to stop playing. I shifted my eyes back to her as she said my name over and over, her head thrown back against my shoulder as she came, her body squeezing me tight. Everything felt hot and electric. My heart pounded inside my chest. "Don't close your eyes. Don't you fucking close your eyes. I'm about to come." I followed, my body shaking as I came, filling the condom. I fell forward, hand clutching at her waist and fingers tightening there, feeling the hot flush of blood pump through my veins.
"Holy," she breathed, looking back at me with a small smile.
"Indeed." I managed to pull myself up and dispose of the condom, and arrange us both on the settee. Sarah was pliant, boneless, and smiled sleepily as she lay back on the cushion with a small sigh.
"I'm not sure I can walk," she said, reaching up to push the sweaty hair from her forehead.
"You're welcome."
She blinked over to me. "Always so cocky."
I grinned, closing my eyes while I tried to catch my breath, at least until I could feel my legs again. Several moments of silence stretched on. Car horns blared on the streets below, a helicopter sounded somewhere in the distance. The room had grown darker when I felt the cushion shift, and I looked up, seeing Sarah stand and begin gathering her clothes.
"What plans do you have for the rest of the evening?" I asked, rolling to my side and watching her slip back into her dress.
"Going home?" "We've both got to eat." I reached out, running my hand along her smooth thigh. Certainly worked up an appetite. She gently brushed me away, kneeling on the floor to find her other shoe. I didn't even remember taking them off.
"That's not what this is."
I frowned. I suppose I should have felt some sort of relief knowing that she wasn't moving this into needlessly emotional territory. But she was such a mystery to me. Obviously inexperienced, obviously naive, but she'd come here, quite recklessly in fact, and was putting her trust in me. Why? Everyone plays a game. What's hers? She slipped into her shoes, straightened, pulled a brush from her purse to smooth through her hair. Her eyes were bright, her face a bit more flushed than usual, but other than that, Sarah looked perfectly presentable. I'd have to try harder next time.
Seven. Maybe this was how Andy got so much done every single day. Nothing cleared the head better than a screaming orgasm with a gorgeous stranger who didn't expect me to go pick up his dry cleaning afterward. Monday morning, I felt energized and completely engaged in the 9 o'clock department meeting. The other executives and their assistants had finally arrived to the new office, and because some things Bennett had been working on came through, we were inundated with the prospect of 20 new marketing clients. I was buried. On the upside, I had very little time to fantasize about Andy-shaped voodoo dolls and castration techniques. But in between the frenzy, walking from one meeting to the next,
a trip to the restroom, a quiet lull after a phone call, I remembered my night with Max, his hard, naked body behind me, my limbs heavy with delicious exhaustion, and his hands fisted in my hair.
"Don't close your eyes. Don't you fucking close your eyes. I'm about to come."
Despite how much fun it had been, I'd felt off for a couple of hours on Saturday morning. Not regretting anything, exactly, but slightly embarrassed that I'd actually done it. It occurred to me that I was giving Max a very bad impression, showing up in some random neighborhood and willing to let him do what he wanted to me in front of hundreds of mirrors, where it was very likely no one would be able to hear me if I needed help. The thing was, even below that thin layer of mortification, I knew I'd never felt more alive. He made me feel safe, as strange as that was, and like I could ask him for anything. Like he saw something in me nobody else did. He didn't seem even the slightest bit surprised or judgmental when I'd laid out my terms in his office. Didn't even blink when I told him we wouldn't be having sex in any bed. I sat back at my desk in my office, closing my eyes as the memory returned from the last time Andy and I had had sex, more than 4 months ago. We'd stopped bothering to argue over his schedule, or mine. Instead, the lack of intimacy in our relationship felt like a dark shadow growing to cover the room. I'd tried to spice things up, showing up at his office late one night in nothing but a long coat and heels. But I'd have been better off showing up wearing a yellow duck suit for how embarrassed he was to see me. "I can't have sex with you here," he'd hissed, looking over my shoulder. Maybe he said that because he could only have sex with other women in the office. I'd been humiliated. Without saying anything, I'd turned and left. Later that night, he came home and made some effort, waking me up, kissing me, trying to take his time and make it good. It hadn't been. My eyes blinked open as the reality of everything seemed to hit me in this one, totally random moment. Max made me feel so good, and Andy had only ever made me feel miserable. It was time for me to woman up and stop apologizing for taking whatever the hell I wanted. Although I still craved him uncomfortably much, knowing that I would hear from Max eventually let me shut off wondering how or when it would happen for most of the week. But when lunch rolled around on Friday and he still hadn't contacted me, it occurred to me that if Max wanted to end things, he might just decide to not text me. We had no rules for how to let this go or how to back away gracefully. In reality, the way I'd set it up meant that the most graceful way to back out would be to simply disappear. There was something comforting about an arrangement that was so tenuous it could just evaporate. Still, I wanted to see him again. I put my phone in my desk drawer, determined to not take it with me to the afternoon team meeting. But 10 minutes into discussions about a lingerie marketing campaign, and with the memory of Max slipping my skimpy lace panties down my legs still playing on a loop inside my head, I found an excuse to get up and go back to my office to retrieve it. No message. Damn. Returning to the conference room, I found Bennett flipping through slides at lightning speed. It was okay for me because I'd seen the deck beforehand, but I could tell the newly arrived junior executives wanted to throw up their lunches. "Slow down, Bennett," I came up and said to him quietly. He snapped his attention to me, his temper barely tied down.
"What?"
I swallowed. Colleagues or not, he still scared the hell out of me. "I think you clicked through the marketing segmentation too fast," I explained. "You just finished it yesterday when these guys were on a plane. Let them digest it." He nodded tightly and looked back to the screen. I could almost feel him counting to 10 in his head as he let them read the slide, and I looked across the table at Chloe. She was watching him, biting down on her pen to keep from laughing. I doubted Bennett had any sympathy for the RMG employees who had just uprooted their entire lives and were expected to have memorized 17 tables of market figures in 24 hours.
"Good?"
he asked, clicking to the next slide without waiting for an answer. "Catch up or catch the next train." That's what I'd overheard Bennett saying to a new marketing associate named Cole. My phone vibrated loudly on the table and I picked it up, apologizing under my breath for the interruption. Thank the universe for Bennett Ryan and his endlessly entertaining, impatient perfectionism. For 2 whole minutes, I'd forgotten to wonder if Max was still interested in meeting. New York Public Library has some fascinating volumes. Schwartzman Building, 630. Wear a skirt, your tallest heels, and skip the pants. I grinned down at my phone, thinking Max was a pretty lucky bastard that all I would need to do was remove my panties before meeting him. When I looked up, Chloe still had her pen between her teeth, but this time she was watching me, eyebrows raised. Looking back to Bennett, I studiously ignored her stare, but I couldn't seem to lose my giddy grin. There were altogether too many iconic buildings in New York. Every building seemed familiar or laden with history, but few were as immediately recognizable to me as the New York Public Library, with its lion statues and hulking stairs. I'd seen him 4 times since the first night we had sex, and even though this was a planned meetup, I still felt like the breath had been kicked out of me when I spotted my beautiful stranger. He stood far above everyone around him, and as he searched the crowd for me, I took a few seconds to just drink him in. Black suit, dark gray shirt, no tie. His hair had grown out in the last couple of weeks, and although he kept it longer on top, I liked it messy like this. Imagined tugging on it with his head between my legs. He cut quite a shadow on the steps as people parted around him. I want to see you naked in daylight, I thought. I want to see pictures of you with me in full sun. Max found me then, and I was totally busted for ogling him. A knowing smile spread across his face, and he hooked a finger at me, beckoning. When I drew closer, he teased. You were staring. I laughed, looking away. Was not. For someone who so enjoys being stared at in her most intimate moments, you're awfully shy about being caught playing the voyeur. I felt my smile shrink a little as something ached beneath my ribs. I spoke before even really planning to. I'm just really happy to see you. This clearly caught him off guard. He recovered with a bright smile.
Ready to play?
I nodded, oddly nervous despite the rush of heat that spread across my skin. We'd had an audience of 100 mirrors last week, but had otherwise been entirely alone. Here, even at 6:30 on a Friday night, the library was bustling. This looks interesting, I mumbled, turning to lead us inside when he pressed 2 subtle fingers to the small of my back.
Trust me, he said, leaning forward to whisper. This is right up your alley.
Once inside, he moved in front of me, walking ahead as if we were simply 2 strangers passing through the library entryway and headed in the same direction. As I followed his lead, I noticed a few people watching him. A couple pointed and nodded to each other. Only in Midtown Manhattan would an investment whiz playboy be immediately recognizable. I followed him, admittedly paying more attention to the fit of his jacket across his wide shoulders than to where we were headed. Slowing, Max said, "How much do you know about the New York Public Library, Sarah? This branch specifically." I searched my memory for details I would have picked up from movies or TV. Other than the opening scene in Ghostbusters, not much, I admitted. Max laughed. "This library is different from most in that it relies heavily on private philanthropy. Donors, such as myself," he added with a wink, "take a special interest in certain collections and give generously, very generously in some cases, and are sometimes granted small perks in return. Quietly, of course." "Of course," I repeated. He stopped, turning to smile at me.
"This is the room most people would recognize, the Rose Main Reading Room."
I looked around. It was warm and inviting, filled with hushed voices and the muted sounds of footsteps and the turning of pages. My eyes moved to the ornate ceiling painted to resemble the sky, the arched windows and glowing chandeliers overhead, and for a beat, wondered if Max planned on taking me on one of the large wooden tables lining the cavernous and very busy room. I must have looked unsure because Max laughed softly beside me.
Relax, he said, placing a hand on my elbow. Even I'm not that bold.
He asked me to wait while he crossed the room to speak with an older gentleman who I got the impression knew exactly who Max was. The man glanced at me over Max's shoulder, and I felt myself blush, quickly looking away and back up toward the painted ceiling. Only a few moments later, I was following Max down a narrow flight of stairs and into a small room filled with row after row of books. Max knew exactly where to go, and I couldn't help but wonder if he came here a lot, or if he'd scouted the location sometime during the week. I liked both ideas, actually. The Max who was as intimate with the library as someone who worked here, and the Max who had been thinking about this as much as I had. He stopped in a quiet corner in a narrow, crowded row of books. It felt like the stacks pressed in on us from both sides. The tight quarters gave me the strange illusion of the walls closing in. I heard a cough and realized that there was at least one other person in the room with us. Anticipation thrummed low in my belly. Max lifted a book from the shelf without even really looking.
"Do you read smut, Sarah?"
I knew when he laughed a little at my reaction that my eyes must have nearly popped out of my head. I wasn't a prude, and I wasn't closed to the idea of erotica. I'd simply never gone looking for it. Not much.
Not much, or not any.
I've read some romance novels. He was already shaking his head.
I'm not talking about soft focus covers with sweaty, bare-chested men. I mean books that tell you how the woman feels when the man penetrates her, how she aches when he slips his tongue inside her, how he describes her flavor when she asks him to. I mean books that describe the fucking.
My heart began to drill beneath my sternum at how casually he talked about things that made me want to close my eyes and squirm. Then no, I haven't read anything like that.
Well then, he said, handing me the book. I'm happy to be here for this momentous occasion.
I glanced down at the cover. Anais Nin, Delta of Venus. I knew the name, and, like everyone, I knew the reputation, too. Great, let's check this one out. I flipped it over, looking for some kind of barcode or number. But the volume was leather with heavy gilded pages, obviously a rare edition. Take it with us?
Oh, no, 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 no. One can't actually check out the books at this library, he began. And besides, where would the fun be in that anyway? The acoustics in here are so lovely, with the wood and ceilings and whatnot.
What, here? My heart drooped a little. As much as I loved the idea of reading something racy with Max nearby, I loved the idea of being completely wild with him tonight even more. He nodded.
And you're reading to me.
I'm reading you erotica in here?
Yes. And I'll probably feel the need to fuck you in here, too. You got to be loud last week, but this week...
He brushed some hair off the side of my face, lips pursed.
Not so much.
I swallowed heavily, unsure whether this was exactly what I wanted to hear or whether it terrified me. His hand, spreading across the back of my neck, was soothing. His palm was warm. His fingers were long enough to wrap almost to my windpipe.
You did only give me Fridays and no beds, he said. Circumstances being what they are, I want to do something with you I know with absolute certainty you've never experienced before.
And you? I reconsidered why he knew this room so well. He shook his head.
Most people aren't allowed down here at all, and I can assure you I've never fucked a girl in the library before. For as much of an expert at this as you think I am, most of my adventures are in a limo on the way to drop someone off somewhere. I'm more of an arse than a slut if I'm being introspective about it.
There was freedom in his determined bachelorhood. I didn't have to pretend that this meant any more than it did. And even though it was only sex... And even though he was the first man I'd been with whom I really didn't need to know at all, I had craved his touch all week long. I reached up and pulled his face close to mine. Fine with me,
I don't need you to be a nice guy. He laughed into a kiss.
I'll be quite nice to you, I promise. You've so far refused the back of my limo or a quick shag at my place. You're making me break all of my habits.
We were invisible from across the room, thanks to the books surrounding us,